Welcome to Witness Rugby Chat, episode 12 of 2024 with myself, James Gordon, and Mike Parsons. It's just us two this week, so we're going to bring you a bit of a special talking points episode of the podcast where we're going to raise some debates and some questions for you to listen, first of all, to our thoughts, but then maybe to have some thoughts of your own. And then you can fire them over to us in the coming weeks and we'll try and wrap them up before the end of the season. Before we get into all that though, Mike, let's just do our usual chat about the game against Sheffield. A good win for Widnes in the end, an important win when it comes to the playoffs, but probably, I mean, I think I said on Twitter, they almost had to win the game twice a little bit because they went from 25-0 to 25-16 and then still needed them extra couple of tries to be sure of the win.
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't be a Widnes game, would it, without having a little bit of turbulence. But I thought first half, I thought we was fantastic. I thought we really shown some patience in the game. I think it was really important we scored the first try because of the wind that we was playing into. And we were struggling to get up the pitch because when we was trying to kick from deep, the ball just wasn't travelling downfield very far at all. And because we was leaving it to last tackle, the wingers were kind of marking the edges, so they were returning the ball, like, you know, to the halfway line at times. But we looked comfortable and we was defending really well. And look, you can sit here and point out that, you know, Isaac Farrell and Corey Aston, I don't think they did enough to break us down. Some of the last tackle plays was a bit, you know, naff. I think the first two ended up over the touchline out on the full. So a bit scrappy by them. But nevertheless, I thought we defended brilliantly. And when we did get good ball, our attacking line looked very sharp and deep. And we executed really well. I thought Tom Gilmore and Joe Lyons was very cohesive. I thought in that first half, Lloyd Robey was busy out the back. And then obviously Shane Grady, Rodri Lloyd, they was as strong as ever in the back row. Lloyd picking that ball out of the air to score. I think as soon as that was travelling across and I seen where Rodri Lloyd was and where the ball was landing, I said to the person next to me, if he catches that, it's a try. And he scored a few of them this year. And then the second half starts and it couldn't have started any better, could it, really? I mean, a mistake and, you know, we score more or less straight away. And at that point, at 25-0, you're thinking, what can possibly go wrong? And as soon as you ever say that, you know, what happens? A freak knock-on, I think it was. I think I've watched it back and I think it was a knock-on. It wasn't an offload. And then you sat there and think, no, we're okay, you know, get through this next set and we'll be fine. And the last thing you want to do is kick the ball out on the full. Widnes, hold me beer. We go ahead and do that. And then the next play after that, and in fairness to Sheffield, probably their best part of the game was that third try where they broke us down Mike Butt's side. Not really Mike Butt's fault. He was just, they had an overload on that side and scored. But I think what was really impressive was at that point, I think there was 9 points in the game. I think the crowd was fantastic. It could have been quite easy for the crowd to get anxious and that anxiety go onto the pitch. We got back into a bit more of a grind. A couple of sets completed. Regain field position, and then we kind of put the game to bed really through, you know, a couple of more good tries, and not more so than that Jack Owens flash pass. I mean, watching the highlights, you miss the ball touch his hands. You watch it 3 or 4 times and you don't see the ball touch his hands. And I think that was obviously, it got the champagne moment in the bridge suite. But I think the moment of the game for me where I think it was a massive part of the game was Joe Lyons in the first half chasing back to tackle, I think it was Corey Aston. and we got back and we defended the set. And I think the body language of the two teams, I think we grew 10 foot tall. And you could just see their players turn around in a bit of frustration. And I think that was the moment in the game where we probably got the edge over Sheffield. And yeah, overall, for 70 minutes, it's a fantastic performance.
Yeah, that was the one-on-one steal that Aston pulled off and tried to return for a try in the first half. I didn't get to speak to Alan Coleman after the game. I was sat in the north stand. I even seen you, Mike. I sat in the north stand. But I'm sure Alan Coleman would have been pleased with the completion rate in the first half, because I think that was probably what helped Widnes. Even though they weren't getting out their own end, they were completing the sets and getting through them. And to be honest, it was a pretty faultless performance up until probably that error by Rodri Lloyd. I think the only error I think Widnes made in the first half really was that one-on-one steal, which you could put down to good play by the opposing team, really. It was just a shame, yeah, that led to that one knock-on, led to three tries, basically, and all of a sudden Sheffield were back in the game. What it does mean is that it's really boxed up now in the playoffs. So to lose... are on 27. Toulouse have had a bit of a wobble last few weeks. Bradford have now gone up to third, which is quite remarkable when you consider Widnes have beat Bradford three times this season. Sheffield are on the same points as Bradford on 26. Widnes on 25. Featherstone on 24. York on 22. Batley on 20. And maybe Doncaster looking like outsiders now on 19. So second place really is in reach for Widnes still at this point. Widnes still got a face to lose at home, but other than that, the rest of the games are against teams below them in the table. Clearly, getting into the playoffs full stop is a priority, but finishing top four gives you a home game in the playoffs, and that now looks like a tangible target for Widnes, Mike.
100%. I think after that Featherstone game, this was the game. If that top four was going to be a realistic mission, I think we had to get momentum back from the Sheffield game, and we did it, and we did it convincingly. Really, the scoreline probably doesn't reflect how comfortable and convincing we was. And, you know, we've got Doncaster still to play and Batley, which after the last weekend's results, them two probably maybe a step too far for them now. I mean, we play Batley this week, don't we? They have to win that game to stand any chance of the playoffs, I think. And maybe by the time we get to Doncaster, they might be out the race as well. So it's looking good. I'm not... The message was in the bridge tweet from Alan was, if we win five games from five, we'll finish second. I'm not sure we will finish second, but I think we will finish in the top four. I really do. If we play like we did against Sheffield, I see us winning at least three or four games out of that next crop.
Yeah, well, next week we're going to have a bit more of an in-depth look at the fixtures and the respective run-ins, but probably the biggest game from a Widnes point of view other than the Widnes game this week is Toulouse play Sheffield. So you would imagine that at least one of the teams above Widnes are going to lose, unless it's a draw. But even if it is a draw, if Widnes win, they can go above one of the two teams. So that's a massive opportunity to get into the top four this weekend. Bradford have probably got a home banker against Dewsbury. Featherstone would probably fancy it at home to Barrow. York away at Whitehaven, which is probably a peculiar one at the moment, because on paper you would probably back York to win there. But Whitehaven have got this real sort of, what's the word, like a backs against the wall sort of mentality at the moment, in it together sort of thing, and they know they've got Wakefield the week after as well, so that might be a game that they really look at to target. So like we keep saying, it's a big game for Widnes. I'm sure maybe Alan Coleman will mention the games against Batley earlier in the season. Of course, Batley have been to witness and won twice this season already. You know, like we say, witness have beat Bradford three times. They'll want to be making sure that they're not on the receiving end of Batley three times.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, you go to Batley, don't you, and you've got to go to war. It's as simple as that. It's never pretty. You've got to roll your sleeves up. What I'm expecting from Sunday, I don't know about you, James, but I think it's going to be... We will try and play to a degree. Of course, we will. It's in our DNA that Alan's trying to push onto the team, is, you know, play a good brand of rugby, but you do have your limitations on the hill. I'm expecting a bit of a game like we had up at Whitehaven a few weeks ago, potentially. Obviously, weather-dependent as well. But a bit more of a battle like that, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think the last couple of times we played at Batley, obviously under John Kerr, obviously John Kerr knows that ground as good as anybody, having coached Batley for a few seasons, and Widnes really did play it almost to perfection in those games. I remember John Kerr saying to me he thinks there's 16 points in the hill. Basically, might have been 16, might have been 15 to make you go 16 points up, and his opinion was if you can get to if you're playing down the hill first half and that's how much you've got in front, you should have enough to win it. And that's obviously what they did in 2022. Last season was a bit of a different game, wasn't it? Was it on a Monday? Last season. And it was a tight game. Widnes lost Danny Craven, didn't they, early in that match, and that seemed to disrupt them a little bit. But yeah, it's an interesting one. It's a unique one at Batley. Widnes haven't got the greatest record there, to be honest. But ultimately, if they want to get into the playoffs, they're going to have to win games like that.
100%, James, 100%. And I'll be honest, Batley, I think it's a good time to go to Batley, to be honest. I mean, it is make or break for them, I suppose, this week, looking at the league fixtures. I mean, I could speak too soon there, but I think if you look at Batley of years gone by, this is probably the weakest Batley have been now for a number of years. I suppose the one thing that they've had in their artillery this year is they have used dual reg a little bit from Castleford in comparison to, you know, years gone by a bit more. But if some of them dual reg players don't play, I'd be really confident. I really will. I think if you can mirror that Sheffield game, I think you come away victorious. I really do. Be interesting to see if Luke Hooley plays, because I know he didn't this week. I think he qualifies to play for them because he's played a certain amount of dual reg games. He's a massive player for them.
Yeah, he played for Cast last week against Warrington. He was playing centre, scored a try. So you would think maybe Craig Lingard wants him playing for Cast. So like you say, that would be a blow for them. And, you know, Craig Lingard himself, Batley were very well coached last season. That was why they did so well. Now that he's gone, are they the same team? Who knows? But they've beat Widnes twice this season, and that's got to be they'll probably use that as an advantage, as a psychological advantage. They've beaten Widnes twice on their own pitch, and, you know, Batley's being notoriously hard to go to for visiting teams. Yeah, we'll have to see how that rumbles. But I think, yeah, it's a tough one, like you say, as well. There's a little bit of a Batley playing it, thinking, well, we need to win, like you said earlier, Mike, we need to win to sort of not keep our season going. But, you know, if they lose to Widnes, it's going to make it very difficult for them to reach the playoffs. And so maybe that makes them a threat as well, because it's a little like, almost like a cup tie for them. Who knows? They've got a decent record at home. Well, they did lose to Halifax at home not so long ago, so they are beatable there.
Yeah, I think another important thing as well for us that I've noticed, I've picked up on in a couple of Alan's interviews, and it points to us having a much more fitter mobile pack. Obviously, you've got Kirky and Murray. Obviously, much bigger, but they play long minutes, and Lucas Green's very fit as well. he's been holding, he's mentioned in a couple of interviews, I think even with yourself, James, where he's been holding substitutions back to have almost an extra one at the back end of the game. And you're thinking, if we can manage to do that on the hill, that could be a massive important factor in winning potentially as well.
If you won the toss, Mike, would you play up the hill first or down?
Uphill. All day long for me.
And get it out of the way.
Uphill, get it out the way. And while you're fresh as well, try and go in half-time winning, because if you're winning up the hill, you know, then you've got, you know, all the second half then to come downhill. And then secondly, I think in most games, I think like, well, say most, quite a few this year, we've finished the stronger. I think Wakefield at home against a full-time outfit, we finished stronger. The York game, you know, we come from behind out of nowhere to steal that right on the bell. You know, if we can have that positive mentality of finishing stronger. Even Sunday, we had a much better first half, but we finished strong again. Do you know what I mean? So if we've got that in our heads, and you can try and go in half time even winning or even in touching distance, think that psychology going down the hill in the second half. I do think there's a lot in that. What about you, James?
Yeah, I'm tempted to agree. I think you play up the hill first. Try and keep the score down to as low as possible, and then see what you can do. I know there's an argument to say that it's actually harder defending playing downhill, because obviously when you're running back defending, you're running up the hill. But I mean, it's mainly the drop-offs in the corners, isn't it? And I think you can get, if you play down the hill first half, I think teams can sometimes get a bit desperate. You know, because they feel like they need to get points on the board, and then that's when they start kicking it out dead and you're giving seven tackle sets, and you know, it's very difficult to put a kick into the corner at Batley and do it properly. And I think you do get to a stage where if Batley can hold you up in the middle of the field, you're thinking, well, how on earth are we going to score? And I think you're more desperate to do it in the first half, because you're thinking, like I say, you're thinking you need to get points on the board, whereas at least in the second half, you can manage the situation, you can do the risk and reward ultimately. If you're losing 10-0 and there's 10 minutes left, you can take that risk and go for the corner, whereas if it's 0-0 after half an hour, you can't balance the risk and reward so much. So we'll look forward to that one on Sunday. Hopefully, see you all there. Batley away is usually a decent day out for people. In fact, I heard someone when I was coming out of the ground on Sunday commenting about the cheesy chips at Batley. So someone somewhere is looking forward to them. Widnes have announced recently that the end of season dinner is going to be held at the DCBL Stadium on Wednesday, the 18th of September, in the Bridge Suite, 7 o'clock, for a 7:30 start. £25 per person, and it's a 2-course meal. I'm sure Mike will be there. But this leads us on to our talking points for this, because I'm going to run through. I have no idea what they're going to give out at the end of season dinner. They might not even do any awards, but I'm sure they'll do a few. But I've got a list of a few things for us to talk about here, Mike, and we'd like to get you, the listeners, points of view on these. I'm giving these to Mike Cold, so bear with him. I'll try and ad lib while he thinks. I've started, my first one is best performance of the season.
Player or team?
No, team, sorry. See, already we're hitting a goal already.
Oh, there's been some, you know, because there's some that because they happened so long ago, you kind of forget a little bit more. Because I remember going up with my uncle actually for that horrible kickoff in the Challenge Cup up to Bradford, where we'd had that shaky start, hadn't we, to the season, and the fan base had turned a bit, and out of nowhere we was convincing winners. And you know, Bradford that day, they had Danacoro, Aribi Doro, they were formidable in the middle, so there was that one. But because it was early season, it wasn't kind of, I suppose, the most glamorous, was it, at Oddsall? It never is. Do you know what? I've got to go for the comeback at York. I've got to. because we were dead and buried, weren't we? And then out of everybody this year, even the player who scored at the end over in the corner, Mike Butt, it couldn't have gone to a more deserved player, really, could it, either?
Yeah, I mean, I'd wrote down the Bradford Cup match partly because I didn't go to that match. I watched it on TV. I wasn't down for commentary and I'd been away somewhere on the Saturday doing football. It was one of them where you woke up on a Sunday morning and I was like a bit miffed with how the previous few games had gone. And I massively regretted not going as soon as it kicked off. But then obviously I was over, you know, it was too late by that time. It's the sort of thing I have nightmares about sometimes, Mike. I do genuinely have dreams and nightmares where I have a dream about a match kicking off and I'm not there and I should have been there. Honestly, you won't believe how many times that happens to me. But like you say, in the context of where Widnes were, you know, new coach, like you say, a little bit of fan apathy. They hadn't been particularly convincing against Crusaders the week before. To go to Bradford and beat them the way that they did, played very well. I think that was almost like a drawing a line in the sand sort of thing, because I feel like had the first few weeks gone on like a bit more, it could have got ugly for a few people. Whereas I feel like that was almost like a hang on, we've got the team here that can, if you can beat Bradford away, you can give most teams in the league a good going over. And I think that performance probably was almost the start of the Alan Coleman era, if you like, in terms of it set the benchmark. I think for me, and I know Halifax have had a bad, a disappointing season, that the second half against Halifax was exceptional. You don't see Widnes, or certainly you don't see Widnes do that to too many teams, and we haven't seen Widnes do that to too many teams over the years, but that was up there, the second half, to rip them apart the way Widnes did. Again, an important time at the start of the season, whereas, as I say, there was still a little bit of fan apathy going on. There was still, people were a bit unconvinced by the squad or whatever, but that second half, admittedly against Halifax side that haven't done so well this season, was right up there. I've gone for another awkward one, Mike, for your ear. Best match of the season. So this isn't necessarily the best performance, but maybe the most entertaining or the most, you know, most memorable match.
Oh.
And I went for the York one for this, because it was one of them games, it went both ways. But I also feel like, again, we talk about in the context of the season, Widnes had just started wobbling a little bit. It was a game that you'd had a good start to the season, started falling off a little bit, and it was a game where, had Widnes lost that match, they might well have ended up in that middle section of teams who were desperately scrapping to get towards the playoffs. Whereas, because Widnes won that game, and don't get me wrong, they've won many other games since then, but that winning that game just kept them in that playoff, in the top part of the table for a bit longer, and give them more of a cushion to build on.
Yeah, do you know what? Context is everything. That's why I did pick out the Challenge Cup game and then obviously the York game as well, because like you've just quite rightly said, it was at a pivotal moment where, you know, if that result could have gone differently, you know, we could have gone on a bit of a losing run, and it did stop the rot. Yeah, knowing that question's coming up, I may have swapped my answer to the Bradford game and picked the York game. But to try and give a bit of a different answer, because I do agree with you on that, I feel the Bradford League game at Oddsall, and the reason why I say that is because with 10 minutes to go, didn't we get, was it two drop goals on the Joe Lyons try, or there was a penalty and then a drop
goal on the
Lyons try, and that was kind of, it was in the balance and you was running out of time, and there's not a lot of space to do X-factor things on the Oddsall pitch, and we pulled that kick out of the bag for Joe Lyons, I think, to scoot over and score, which was a great bit of creativity. I think from a fan's perspective, you're right next to the Bradford fans, so you get the energy from them as well, and you're up here and they're down there, and that's switched in 10 minutes. That's always a bit of a bonus.
Yeah.
Goal in there as well, so that one was up there.
I think, yeah, any match where you can kick two drop goals has got to be fairly high on the list, hasn't it? Because it's a very rare sort of thing that happens. Yeah, was it the penalty that made it 12-all, and then, yeah, and then it was 13-12 to Bradford, then it was 13-all, and an excellent to go to Bradford twice this season and win is an excellent achievement. My next one is best new signing.
Tell you what, James, there's some contenders for this one. I'm going to upset a few here.
I know.
You're going to answer as well, aren't you?
I know you go schmoozing in the bridge suite, so I don't know whether you're going to upset anyone.
No, I will give you an answer, but first of all, how can you make me choose between a Dan Murray and a Mike Butt?
Well, to make it easy for you, I'm going Dan Murray.
Yeah, do you know what? I was steering to Dan Murray because the people have wingers get more of a fair crack at it, don't they? I think the younger fans take to him more because they're standing on the edge. I think Mike Butt, he's got a bit of personality about him, hasn't he, as well, where he engages with the fans. He's solid as a rock. I don't think you could have handpicked a better winger to come into the club, to be honest. And I genuinely mean that. But Dan Murray, he's a prop we've not had in a long time. And he could do 80, mate. I really believe that. I really believe he could do 80 minutes and he could do it. Obviously, you don't want him to. Yeah. But we're such a better team when he's on the field. And I think there were moments in the game on Sunday, do you know, when things were going wrong, where I was turning to people next to me and was like, we need Dan back on here. We need Dan back on. He just makes that middle so strong. So I think I've got to go with Dan Murray. I've got to. I think he's a prop that we've not had.
Again, we'll talk about context. I think because he was a late signing. He was signed, you know, I think we'd already played a couple, or it was certainly
his first game was the Challenge Cup game, yeah. I think. I think
without him being an addition at that stage was critical because the squad was looking a bit, you know, there was question marks over the squad being a bit thin. To then pulling in another body, but actually one of your starting props basically was a big move by the club, you have to say, and an important one, because I think if they'd not made that, it might have got difficult this season. I'm sure we would have seen a lot more dual edge with Warrington probably, but I think, like you say, and I'm going to touch wood while I say this, he seems to be fairly durable as well. You know, we've got we've had forwards at Widnes in recent years that have, you know, it's been great when they've been on the field, but keeping them on the field's been an issue. I mean, even Liam Kirk, to be fair, he's had a few knocks here and there, but he's, you know, he's not necessarily had a prolonged spell on the sideline. But yeah, I think Dan Murray's been a great signing, and I think the club deserves credit for pulling that one out of the bag at a time where, you know, people were critical of the squad and it was probably thinner than it should have been. Maybe you could argue the quality was lower than it needed to be. Obviously, you had the Martin Riley situation, which was far from ideal as well. To be able to have pulled that signing out of the bag when they did had a massive impact on the season. The next one's a bit trickier, and you might be better than me at remembering things like this. Most memorable try. My most memorable try was the Mike Butt one on Sunday, but that's just because it was only on Sunday, to be honest. Can you think of any others that that spring to mind?
The Mike Butt one at York was definitely one. 100%. Obviously, context of the game again. Context is everything. I think one that for me was an outstanding piece of play, and well, two actually. One was, I think it was the last try at Bradford at home, and it was the inside ball, wasn't it? And Keenan Brown went racing through and scored. I thought the execution of the play, and it was just little small passes in such a small small space, which unpicked the opposition, and it was just like a knife through butter. It was really easy on the eye. And then there was one earlier in the season as well where I think it got try of the month, actually, where I think the props linked up, didn't they? I think it was Kirk and Murray, actually. And I think Sam Wilde went racing through, didn't we? And it went back to the left, and we went in. So that was a really good try. And then the one on the Odsall pitch, Joe Lyons, the kick, that was a really good one, because it was obviously you're playing on such a narrow pitch, and the creativity of that. And we scored a very similar one in the Challenge Cup. I think Lloyd Roby picked that one up and scored. But I think that Keenan Brand one, because it was right on my side, and it was just the smartness of Tom Gilmore, and like, that in such a tight space, and it kind of put the cherry on the cake of such a fantastic performance. And they come, and it was probably one of the biggest sides you'll ever see come to Widnes in a good few years. And I think ironically we was probably one of the smallest packs we put out all season, and against all the odds, that second half we really turned the screw, and that was like the cherry on the cake where we won the game. But the Jack Owens one on Sunday, Mike Butt's try, courtesy of Jack Owens, I've watched that four or five times back, and I don't even see it touch his hands, James. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, certainly, yeah. I do like how Widnes play that at the moment, the way Jack Owens is popping up. I know that's his job, sort of, at fullback. He was named in the centres on Sunday, but I do like him going in at, I suppose you could say he was in at centre for that try, because I just feel like he gives you so much extra playmaking option, especially close to the line as well. So yeah, we might well see a bit more of that next season. But right, the final one then of this little section is the big one, and of course there's still time for this to change. So player of the year, who are you going for, Mike?
Player of the year. Well, what I will say to this is, what a nice headache this is, because usually you only have two or three candidates, don't you? Whereas I reckon there is a proper solid five or six. Dan Murray, already mentioned. Tom Gilmore, I think, because he doesn't come up with the flash tries and, you know, his placing of kicking the ball. The amount of times I talk to people at away grounds of, you know, supporters from the other team, because I love doing that, because you see such a different perspective. And they always say you've got the best halfback in the league. So it's hard to disregard him. Joe Lyons, I think, had a great season. Sorry, go on, James.
No, I was just going to say on the subject of Gilmore, I think you can tell that Tom Gilmore's had a good season, because I don't really hear anybody moaning about him. You know, and I think previously, when he was at Widnes previously, you'd get people moaning about him not doing this, that, whatever. Whereas I think now there's an understanding of how good he is and what he does. And, you know, Widnes have given him the platform to do what he is good at doing. And he manages the game really well. And I think he's just one of that. Like you say, he doesn't come up with the flash plays necessarily. But he does the important things sort of quietly assured manner, really. And like you say, it's a great, and I think it works. It sort of works the halfback combination, because you sort of, you know, Tom Gilmore's the more senior of the two. He pulls the strings, and Joe Lyons has been a fairly willing support act, and you know, I think we talked about this a bit last week. Alan Coleman went went out on a limb and said, you know, Joe Lyons was going to be his number six, whether that was his first choice or not, he's backed him. And I think you can't argue with the way that's gone. Joe Lyons is very durable. And I think that shouldn't be underestimated. I think given the amount of work that he does, and, you know, defensively, I think he's very durable. And that's helped Widnes have that, you know, having a settled team is very important, and especially in them key positions. So you got Dan Murray, Tom Gilmore, Joe Lyons. Who else?
No, these are all honourable mentions. I will cut to the chase. It's between two, and I could flip a coin, and whatever it landed on, that's the answer. But I will go for an answer. Sorry, go on.
Before you give these two, my two were going to be Jordan Johnstone and Matty Fozard.
So were mine, and I think you're going to go tails, and I'm going to go heads. I'm going Matty Fozard. I think you're going Jordan Johnstone.
To be honest, I'm very much on the fence. And I am open to bribes. To be fair, I wouldn't be surprised if they end up sharing it, to be honest, because ultimately that's what they've done such a good job of in the position all season. And I know obviously Jordan Johnstone steps in at loose forward, and I know Alan Coleman's been pretty, he's basically said Johnstone's the best player in the league, and I think he's demonstrated this season on multiple occasions that he has, you know, in terms of an all-round player, he's it's almost like night and day compared to last year, really.
He certainly is, and I think I've referred to it before on this podcast. They're a team within a team. You can see them working together and bringing each other's strengths out. You can almost see when Foz comes onto the pitch, Jordan's kind of at that stage, like, really desperate to get to 13 because he gets a bit more freedom in defence and obviously linking the play going forward. And the reason why I've gone for Matty ever so slightly, well, two reasons, really. One's probably not really fair to the question because it's about this season. One is I've never seen Matty Fozard have a bad game for Widnes. That includes this season, but that is bringing things into the question from last season. But secondly, and more relevant, I think that Featherstone game, we really missed him. And maybe you could have been talking about it differently if Johnstone wasn't playing and Fozard had to play the 80, potentially. But when the 20-25 minutes comes and Foz comes on, he lifts the place, he lifts the crowd, people get excited, the play speeds up. He's try scoring. I mean, he must be 1-2 over the season. He can play 80. He's a running threat. To be honest, he's been putting in some good tackles. On Sunday, he put a big tackle in against, I think it was Titus Guaze, put him flat on his back 1-on-1, which is no mean feat. I think Jordan Johnstone would have been proud of that one himself. Really harsh, but yeah, I'd say by a whisker, Matty Fozard. But what I would say is if he was ever going to kind of sit on the fence and get some splinters, giving them to a joint player of the season, that would probably be the scenario where you'd maybe let him off.
I suppose they might do fans' player of the year and coaches' player of the year, which might enable the split choice to happen. So let us know what you think in answer to all of those questions. We have no influence or say whatsoever on what the awards actually are. And I have no idea whether any of them things are going to be part of the awards, but you never know. And it gives us something to talk about for the next 5 or 6 weeks, at least in the build up. Well, I mean, I suppose you've only got 3 weeks until the awards dinner. So, get thinking about that. Next thing I want to talk about is attendances. I've seen a few people pop up with questions about this. So Widnes's average attendance so far this season is 2,418. That includes the cup games, which, of course, were extremely low. League only, it's a far more respectable 2,689, which, to be honest, includes quite an anomaly. The first game against Barrow, there was only 1,700, and that is 600 fewer than any other than the next lowest. So that was, I think that was the first league game. That was very low in comparison to the rest. You know, and maybe had that been a bit more close to the median crowd this season, the average probably would have been over 2,750, which isn't terrible. The highest crowd, 4,056 against Wakefield. Of course, Wakefield brought a fair few. The only other one over 3,000 was against Bradford, and Bradford brought a few as well. It's worth noting that in the IMG scoring, the cut-off point for, and I don't know exactly how much it is, it might be an extra quarter of a point or an extra half a point, is a 3,000 average. So if you average over 3,000, you'll get an extra half a point or whatever it is from the IMG criteria. I can only assume that Widnes's score or Widnes's demonstrative score from last season was based on the crowd being over 3,000. That was my, the average crowd being over 3,000. That was my interpretation of it at the time. So as things stand, it looks like possibly you're going to lose, Widnes are going to lose that. Unless, of course, they can get every man and his dog in for these last couple of home games to lose and York.
Yeah, I mean, I think I said it in one of the earlier podcasts we did. I think where we've not shot ourselves in the foot, I suppose, it's just where the club was at, you know, through the last couple of years prior to this season not being good enough. The distance at times between people involved running the club in previous years and the fan base, the distance between that was, you know, how it's affected the season ticket sales. And I always say, and I stand on the hill and die, is once people don't buy a season ticket and they get out the habit of going a game and they've got kids or they've got a family or the football's on, you know, once they get out the habit, the hardest thing is to get them back. And I really feel this season that we've had under Alan, it's been fantastic. It's been a bit of a roller coaster and there's probably still more twists and turns to go. But I think maybe even more important than, obviously it's important getting in the playoffs, but more important than that, the campaign and the build-up to season tickets going on sale for next year is crucial. It's arguably more crucial of finishing fifth than getting a home tie in the playoffs. We have to get more season tickets because if you tie somebody down to a season ticket, we're all Northerners. You want to get full value out of that once you've paid your money up front. It's as simple as that. And, you know, I think the club have got a real opportunity now to get creative, get a little bit cute with what they're doing. Listen to what people want. Do small things here and there and really engage with the community off the back of a relatively successful season. And hopefully start bringing some of these people back so we can try and get to, first of all, try and get to 3,000 as an average for next season, potentially.
Other than the Alan Coleman and the playing group doing what they've done, do you feel like the club is close to the fans and has done things to get it close to the fans?
I feel there's definitely problems coming into the season, 100%. I think things like people's season tickets only arriving a week before the season was starting, you know, it's a massive no-no. People buy them for Christmas. I'm sure you do, James. You know, you want your Christmas present there for Christmas.
It's funny that because I mean, I'll talk to the cows come home. I don't get the season ticket thing as an issue myself. Now, I understand why other people do, but ultimately, as long as I've got it in time for the first game, I'm not too bothered, to be honest. I think rugby league's probably in a bit of an awkward, it's at an awkward time, isn't it? Because it's one of them. I would imagine they probably bulk they do a bulk run of season tickets, and ultimately, if they do them before Christmas, they're going to have to do another run at some point in February or whatever anyway.
I understand that, James, but like, I know people who had kids who theirs didn't arrive, and it's like, that's
Christmas. I mean, like, yeah, it's, it sounds like a simple solution. You know, if that's a problem, and like I say, I think if that's a problem that fans are feeding back, it seems like a fairly simple one to sort out. And I think, I mean, rugby league, not just a witness thing, a rugby league thing in general, a lot of these little things get brushed aside. And actually, a lot of little things add up to quite a big problem.
There's been a lot of like little problems over the years. You know, like, I think there was like part of the problem where, look, a lot of it was down to, obviously, we've not performed on field, you know. Obviously, Phil Finney left his role. Chris come in. The board are relatively quiet. Nobody hears from the board. You know, you had John Kerr, who didn't really engage with fans. So you had all that cocktail together, and it wasn't a good look. And even at the start of this season, the social media at the beginning of the year, I think the social media has come on leaps and bounds as the season's gone on. But there were some rookie mistakes made, you know, and it just adds fuel to the fire. But what I would say is, as the season's turned around, I think the fans who regularly go, the club are listening. You know, the bridge suite, you only have to step into the bridge suite to know that. They are trying. You know, there's more of a family feeling there now. Yes, there's still plenty of work to be done to you know, improve better things. I think one aspect I think they're missing out on is having the club shop in the bridge suite, you know, things like that. I think a couple of members Mondays won't go amiss. Some people like them, some people don't. But for me, if you're putting them out there, if you're a fan who's got plenty of questions, you've got an opportunity to go, usually for free, to ask your questions. You can't ask for more than that. So I'd like to see a few more of them, certainly at the start of next year as well. I think it's moving forward. I think it's moving forward in the right direction. And I think a lot of it's to do with having the right people at the club. And slowly but surely, I think we are doing that. And a massive piece of the jigsaw was getting Alan in as coach. Not that it's his job to engage with fans, but let's have it right. Certainly the younger fan base and, you know, the fractured, you know, performances we've had of years gone by, and in bringing the squad closer to the fans and stuff. I mean, it helps, you know, like with like the kids and, you know, getting them playing on a match day, and the ladies are playing there before the games are kicking off. Things like that. We are moving in a positive direction. And they're the things that, for me, you know, have kind of been missed of years gone by. And it's who them girls playing and the young kids. It's who they bring with them as well to watch them. So I do think we're moving forward in a good direction, to be honest. But there has definitely been problems of the past.
What do you think can be done to improve attendances?
I think for me, kind of not to go over what I've just gone over, but there's got to be a positive campaign of season ticket sales. You know, there's got to be engagement. It can't be just put them on. There's got to be a bit of a build up to it. I think maybe, you know, evenings going into the winter where you've signed a couple of players, you know, having a night where some of them are on stage for interviews, you know, I think years gone by, Rolte was very good at doing that, you know, and obviously Alan can be there and things like that. Winning a positive, you know, end to the season, you know, if we lose 5 out of 5, you know, that's going to have an impact. So definitely, you know, keep improving on field. But I really think a positive, interactive campaign to sell season tickets on social media, and in the winter, plenty of interactive nights at the club as well, where you can come down, Alan's there, the players are there, X, Y, and Z.
I wonder a little bit how much the stadium plays a part in. I'm not saying that this, you know, I'm not saying that sorting the stadium out or doing things at the stadium will necessarily increase attendances massively, but I do wonder how many of the factors that are probably beyond the club's control when it comes to food and drink. You know, I always think when I'm walking in the concourse in the North Stand, it's grey and drab. I'm always like, surely, I mean, even I'd probably sponsor it, to be honest, but surely, and I know there's a few pictures up and stuff, but surely someone could get hold of it and make it look a lot nicer than it does. And I know it is what it is, but ultimately, that stadium, that stand is only ever used by Widnes Vikings. Not, you know, I know there's football there, but it only ever uses a south stand. So why can't we say to the council, right, look, what we're going to do is we're going to, like Wakefield, I don't know where you sat at Wakefield, Mike, but I was in the main stand. And underneath the main stand, they've got loads of boards up about, you know, various areas of the club, you know, pictures and stuff. And it's a nice environment to be in. You know, the way that the concourse is presented, they've got screens up with the prices on and all that sort of stuff. And it's nice and it's welcoming. I went to Preston North End recently. They've got a little family zone in there, you know, a couple of PlayStations, ping pong and stuff for the kids. Clearly there's limited room in the North Stand concourse, especially now that middle part is obviously blocked out because the club use it. But I just feel like I'm sure there'll be people who have bugbears with stuff at the stadium that while it's not the club's fault, the club have got to take into consideration that those things are factors as to why people don't buy tickets.
No, 100%. I'll be honest, James, I think match day experience is probably one of the club's downfalls. I mean, especially when you're not doing well on field, it can feel a bit, you know, depressing and, like you say, grey and dull.
Like a crossbar challenge or something at half time, you know, like people, yeah. Stuff like that. Do you know what I mean?
100%. I think, like, say, the women and the kids playing on the field before the game, I think that's a positive step. But I do agree, I'd love the club. Whether it's doable, I don't know. But, you know, for the club and the council to sit down and be come up with put a bit of oomph into it, whether it is like ping pong or a couple of pool tables or whatever, you know, whatever you can do.
I think branding and telling the story, you know, that big long corridor in the North Stand, I know there's a couple of pitches in there, that could be done. Both sides of the wall could tell the story of Widnes Vikings from start to finish, you know, and I think, or, you know, you can have more plaques. You could probably fund it by having more plaques up. I think it's just, you want to go there and feel like this is, you know, the new stadium's been up, what, now 25 years, you know, more than that. And it's like, nothing's not really changed in there. And you're like, well, it's got Vikings on the seats, so why not make that stand, you know, make it all black and white inside, get all the pictures up of the old players, get this season's squad pictures up so the kids can, you know, do something with them.
As well, but there's plenty of space underneath it on the walls in the North Stand as well, where you could put pictures up, you know, with the new players and flags and all that you're saying. There is plenty of room,
and there's a perfect space almost when you go in straight ahead. If you go in through the central turnstiles,
that's it. Yeah,
straight ahead. That's a perfect place to put a little shop or a, you know, a pop up shop to sell stuff. You know, even if it's just scarves and other stuff in there. I just feel like, you know, the whole walking up to the turnstiles job, there's like so many stewards there, like council people, and you're like, why on earth do we need this many people to direct this many people into the ground? They've got these temporary flipping road signs outside, and you're just like, it's never made to feel like an exciting. If I was a kid, like, it doesn't make you feel excited going into the ground the way that the ground's presented to you at the moment. Whereas, you know, you go into other places and it feels like, oh, yeah, you can feel a bit of a buzz around there. Do you know what I mean? And so, yeah, I just think there's more that can be done. There's more that can be done on that side, in my opinion. And I think I don't really see, you know, what else? The council can't save that stand for anyone else. No one else is going to use that stand. You know, it's Widnes or bust for the, it's Widnes Vikings or bust for the council, basically, at that stadium. So why not embrace it? Same with the museum. I know the museum used to be in the East Stand or wherever. Like, it should be possible to get what is a massive part of Widnes as a town's identity, to make that accessible for people, to tell the story. Because that, ultimately now, that is the strongest selling point that rugby league's got, is the heritage of it. Because it's got so many failings in other areas. The heritage of rugby league and the context, like, you live in Widnes, doesn't matter where you're from. What put Widnes on the map, other than, you know, maybe the chemical industry, whatever, the rugby team put Widnes on the map. People know where Widnes is because of rugby. Here's the story of that. You know, the last Challenge Cup win was 40 years ago. Obviously, we've got the kit this year. So it's 40 years. Like me, you know, I'm 36. And I can't remember Widnes winning anything. So it's like, and I'm 36. So there's a generations underneath me that need to be taught about them previous times, because, you know, like, kids now, it's their grandparents that are telling them about the glory. It's not the parent, you know, it's not like me. My parents are telling, my dad told me, it's not like that anymore. It'll be kids' grandparents telling them, and before long, it won't be any of them. So it's like that museum and heritage stuff, the context of that needs to be put in. And I just feel like if you're not going to do it, then it's all going to disappear.
I think another one as well, actually, that's just pinged into my head. I mean, there's so much, you know, so many ideas that you can do to obviously boost attendances and obviously be more present. But I think as well, a bit of marketing and advertisement around the town and feel that you've got a rugby club there. Because, look, I go to the games. I'll always go to the games. People who I go with, they'll probably always go to the games. But there's a lot of people out there who, if it's not put in front of them, they won't, because either they fell out of love with it a long time ago, or, you know, they've potentially not been a game. And if you don't put anything in front of them, you know, they'll never ever think about doing it. And you walk around Widnes Town and there's just nothing in the town centre representing any games coming up. And I know you've only got a limited budget to spend, of course. I totally get that. But you just think, like, a poster here or there, or...
Well, I mean, you know, like, one thing for me is the stand backs onto a main road. It's got Widnes Vikings on the side. Why wouldn't you have a next game?
Yeah.
You know, pretty much every football ground in the country has a next game board, but the Widnes one doesn't. And you're like, if you put a board, it could go on the back of the Lower House Lane stand. It could go in that corner. You know, you could put a board up in that corner in the northwest corner with next game, date, opponent, time. That's all you need. I mean, that should be the bare minimum that gets done, really. Because, like you say, I think people... I say this to clients of mine as well. People get caught up in, you want this big thing to go viral. You want to get big on social media, whatever. But you've got to do the basics, and they sound boring, the basics, but if you do the basics, but do them well, and, like I say, telling people about the match is the most basic thing you can do. And ultimately, however many people drive past that stadium on a day-to-day basis, by driving past the stadium, they've got no clue whatsoever when the next match is. Yeah. And that, to me, is just like, that's just a simple fix, in my opinion.
It's funny you should say that, actually, because people who know me who don't come to games, when you speak to people with general conversations, starting conversations, know I go to rugby. And one of the most frequently started conversations I have with people are you going to the game at weekend? Who are you playing? And I genuinely mean that. I'm not saying that for the sake of this conversation, but honest to God, the amount of people who say that, even family members, who are they playing? Who are they playing this week? And yeah, like, say, you know, even in like the like, say, I don't know if they can do something with the local newspapers, you know, like, say, outside, like, I think they've got that little advertisement board on Lower House. I think it's above, you know, where you go in diagonally, like you go into the...
Is it a digital one? The council thing? Yeah.
Yeah, but if you're driving the other way, you don't see it.
Yeah.
Like you say, it needs to be flush on the main road.
Did they put the matches on there?
I've seen them once or twice. I mean, I can't say I drive past every week to notice. I know they do advertise like the comedy night on there and things like that. So they probably do feature on there. But like I say, if you're driving the other way, you wouldn't.
Well, and I mean, if you happen to be driving past and it's on the comedy night, you're not going to see when the rugby. See, you're only going to get the benefit unless you're driving back in two. You know, all day. You're not going to see it, are you? There's just things like that. And I feel like people are always looking for the golden bullet, but actually the answer is by just doing loads of simple things.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, let's move on to merchandise, because it looks like the Widnes Online shop is back up and running, and they've added a load of new stuff to it. Notably the Heritage range, which was released last week. It's a shame that the seats weren't a bit cleaner, but I suppose they fit in well with the heritage. You know, it's not Joe Edge's fault that the council haven't cleaned the seats. What do you think of the new merch, Mike?
Do you know what? I've got to be honest. I really love them. I do. I think they're quite smart. I think the polo top's great. I think obviously the kit itself is very smart. I'll probably get one of the two. Just purely down to finances, really. But if I could buy both, I probably would. I think for the older generation, seeing them, you know, the new kits and the club crest, it does things for people. There's a lot of people who are passionate about things like that. So I think it's really hit a sweet spot with people. One person's commented here saying, whoever's fair play to whoever's gone with the heritage stuff. So it's definitely a step in the right direction. But then some of the other stuff, I feel we're missing a real opportunity. When my daughter was born, I was literally looking for cash to burn in the shop, and there wasn't much to get.
Yeah, I mean, like I say, well, we had a bit of a conversation before that. I've not bought anything this year, which is the first time for quite a long time that I haven't, And that was part, and that the website, I mean, that generally I don't go to the market, so I don't go in the actual shop, but I went on the website and obviously it's not being there, whereas it seems like there's a bit more stuff on the website now, so it might be worth having a look. In terms of the Heritage range, I feel like Widnes need to adopt the white shirt, black shoulders as like its norm. Like for me, like I like the quarter zip, but I'd quite like to have that with the new logo on.
Yeah,
I mean, they might do that, you know, and I get it's a heritage range. They might do that in the future, I suppose. I've had this conversation. I think people might remember me having this conversation on the forum many moons ago. Like, I'm not a Widnes lad. I'm from Warrington, which may not go down well with people. But my dad and his family are from Widnes. My mum's Welsh, so I have no family that are from Warrington. You know, I'm from Warrington, but nobody else in my family is. Obviously, rugby-wise, my allegiance is with Widnes. And people always used to say about the town crest being on the shirt, and I was like, well, the logo, Widnes Vikings logo, is the Widnes. I support Widnes Vikings. I don't support Widnes Town. Now, that's not to say that I don't like, you know, I'd like Widnes Town to do well, and Widnes is a place to do well. But I can see, like you say, I can see why people would like this heritage stuff. But at the same time, as someone who's, you know, probably doesn't remember the days pre-Widnes Vikings, really, I'd like to see the white and black stuff with the new logo on, matching almost that style. Do you know what I mean? That's sort of where I'm at with it. You know, that quarter zip for me, if you could get that with the Widnes logo on instead of the... I might buy that one anyway, to be honest, just as a show of support. But yeah, that's my two penneth.
Fair enough. I'm not sure which one I'll buy though, so I'll have to let you know on that one.
I'm gonna go with a quarter zip, I think. That's definitely my. But like you say, I think going back to it for a second is I think the club deserve a great bit of credit for getting it out, because I think they can actually play on that. They should have heritage stuff going all the time, because I think they'd sell, like the scarves. They've got the scarves with the crest on. I think they'll just keep selling that. There's no reason why not to have that and stuff like that. Where if you can get them produced, they should always be available for people to buy.
I've got to be honest, James, and this goes back to what we're saying. We are moving in the right direction and there are positive things coming out slowly but surely. And I think that is an example that just using them two tops alone, where I think the club will see the noise. And it's been positive on social media of people commenting of how much they like it. And hopefully that'll gather momentum and we will start seeing a few more designs like that. Like you say, maybe something slightly different to, cater to your idea for people of that opinion as well, and get a bit more of a variety in there. I think it's really important. I think also another area, sorry, James, just to hit to finish off as well. I think catering for women a bit more as well, because I feel like not all years, some years we haven't, where they do women's sizes, and I think that's vitally important. We have a lot of female supporters who would really appreciate that, or even for the summer vest tops.
There is a ladies' gym wear set on there. I've seen that.
There you go, then.
They're already on the case. They're already on the case, Mike. Right, I suppose we better wrap up before we bore everyone to death. One last thing. Someone was asking about the TV deal. I was seeing a few comments on the TV deal, basically saying Championship should be on TV. I don't necessarily disagree. And I made this point to, I think, Gary Cook, who replied. I made this point to him. The thing is, if there's a TV deal, the games are going to get moved. And I think, actually, one of the strengths for the Championship at the moment is that Sunday 3 p.m. You know, I work on silly games and bits like that. Clearly, I do a bit of Super League, I do a bit of football. Nothing ever clashes with Widnes Sunday 3 o'clock. Now, I'm not just saying that they should keep it at Sunday at 3 o'clock so I can go every week, because I'll go if they're playing on a Tuesday night at 3 a.m, I'd go. But I think you've got to be a bit careful what you wish for with the TV thing, because I think that's what Super League's feeling now. Like, if you look at the state of when some of the games are, they're all over the shop. And I think, realistically, yeah, it'd be nice if you could watch a Championship game on TV, but you've just got to be careful what you wish for, because I think there was a deal on the table this year with Premier Sports. I believe they wanted to show every game, but obviously wanted them at staggered times. And clubs naturally lean back on that. Super League's having a problem with it at the moment, because I'm fairly sure Sky want all the games at different times, but Leeds, St Helens, Hull, Wigan, they want to play Friday nights, they don't want to play any other night. So that's how they're having a hard time trying to get that through, because ultimately Leeds, St Helens, etc., they want their home games Friday night 8 o'clock verbatim.
I think my opinion on this is, I think a couple of years ago I'd have been under that impression of, yeah, you know, we need a TV deal, we need to get it on telly, and in many respects we do to a degree. But when you start looking at the logistics of it, for a televised game in the Championship, I think the only time that works is Sunday 6 o'clock after the rest. Mm. But the problems start here straight away. You've got London, who we're 99% sure, 99.999% sure, they're coming down next year. You can't have part-time players travelling down there on a Monday, or even a Sunday at 6 o'clock. Or indeed fans who have got work the next day. Majority of people, if you're lucky enough to do so, work Monday to Friday. You know, you're relying then on people booking holidays. You're relying on players booking holidays. And let me tell you, I've had this firsthand. I've gone up to Newcastle and gone into work at 5 o'clock in the morning the next day on a Monday night to support Widnes. The game was absolutely dross.
That was it. Was that a 12-4 one?
Yeah.
Finished 12-4,
yeah. There wasn't much to cheer about, let me tell you. And you think of a player doing that, and that's me, a spectator, and it was absolute madness. And unfortunately, you can't pick who's going to be in the Championship in terms of teams. And then you can't say to London, well, you're not going on telly because your stadium's too far away, or Whitehaven, or Newcastle. So you enter this world of problems, and then I just look at it and I think, well, I agree, James. I think it's an identity of the Championship, apart from Toulouse on the Saturday, who have logistics around that. It's an identity of the Championship Sunday at 3 o'clock, and a lot of people afterwards go out and watch the football after if there's a Super Sunday game on.
The bottom line is we need to get more people at the matches, and I'm not convinced putting more matches on TV is going to do that. Now, you might make the case, well, if people see it on TV, but I'm not having it that people are just going to stumble across Championship rugby on TV and then start going to matches. It's just not going to happen. I'd like to see more coverage of it. I'd like to see more highlights of it. But yeah, hopefully it stays at Sunday's 3 p.m.
I've got one more, if I can quickly squeeze it in. Just because he had a phenomenal game at weekend, somebody's asked, what do you think the chances of Shane Grady to be coming back and play a bit of part of next year? What are your thoughts?
Was that Shane Grady's wife who wrote that in?
I don't think it was, actually, because I know the person who's wrote it.
Well, to be honest, I'm trying to get older Shane Grady to come on the podcast, so maybe we can ask him directly at some point in the next week. But, you know, I think I'd be interested to ask him why he made the decision to step away, because I think I said again on Twitter that he was probably one of Widnes's best players last season. And certainly in the two games that we've seen him so far, he doesn't look out of place. You know, he's just come straight back in as if he was, you know, he's almost reached his, I don't know what, not his peak, but you know what I mean? He's almost reached what you would see as his good standards straight away. You know, you wouldn't have watched him and thought he's only just come back. You'd have just assumed he's been playing all season. Whether it's just a ploy to get out of pre-season training, I don't know. But if it was up to me, I'd certainly. And I remember I spoke to Shane when he renewed his contract the other year, and he basically said to me that he'd play for Widnes for as long as they want him, basically. So whether there was a case last season, they didn't have the room on the salary cap maybe, and that's why he decided to step away. And, you know, clearly now the situation's changed. Maybe that was it. But certainly his position of it was that he'd play for Widnes as long as they kept offering him deals, and as long as his body held up. Maybe it was a case of he didn't feel like his body was holding up. But given you've got Jack Owens, Tom Gilmore sticking around, and, you know, he might fancy another. There's clearly something in it where he's come back and thought, oh, actually, I miss it. And like I say, based on, well, he scored 2 in 2. If he carries on that try ratio, then he might be playing back in the centres.
Yeah, absolutely. I think on a personal note, like you say, James, if there's any chance of him being around the squad next year, I'd absolutely have him around. It's not just what he brings on the field, like you've just said. We could talk about it all night about that, but it's also the character he is. He's obviously clearly popular, and for me, if this is his last season to finish off, I'm glad he's come back to have these last few games, because for a player that's so committed, gives 100%, he'd run through brick walls quite literally two of his tries, he did, and defends like that as well. It was a shame he went out on the season that we had last year. It'd be much nicer to see him go out on a high, us succeeding in the playoffs and going as far as we can. But if there is any chance, I'd be nailing him down and signing the deal for me.
Yeah, and well, he might get another ovation at the last home match like he did last season. Thanks everyone for listening, as always. Me and Mike welcome your listening and your company. We'll get a few interviews lined up for next week. We'll be looking out for your opinions on Player of the Year, Try of the Year, Game of the Year, all the other things of the year. And we're interested to get your feedback on everything else. So please do join the Widnes Rugby League fans Facebook page. Leave your comments on there. You can get us on Twitter or comment on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you listen to your podcast. But for this week, that's it from us.